Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, January 21st, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arend.
So today, Avi, we're crossing the bridge, and we will spend the bulk of the show discussing New Jersey, where a new chapter in state politics just begun. Mikey Sherrill was sworn in Tuesday as the Garden State's new governor, making history as the first female veteran ever elected governor in the United States. And she takes office after a pretty bruising election in a state where affordability, taxes, and trust in government are top voter concerns. And she inherits the legacy of Phil Murphy, a two-term Democratic governor who delivered some pretty big progressive wins. I'm talking about the $15 minimum wage as well as recreational marijuana, but he's left office with mixed reviews. So today we're going to look at what Sherrill's victory means for New Jersey Democrats, what her top priorities will be, and we'll also discuss how history will see Phil Murphy's legacy. And we're joined by our favorite New Jersey reporters, Ben Dworkin and Brent Johnson. And of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere. A question of the day: what do you think should be Governor Sherrill's top priority in New Jersey? The number to call and to weigh in, because like we said yesterday, New Jersey folks are weighers, right? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or on Facebook, you can put your comments in the chat.
Governor Sherrill sworn in yesterday in her inaugural speech. She called Philadelphia part of the greater Camden metropolitan area.
Wow. Re-centered. I love how she centered Jersey there.
So apparently the governor of East Pennsylvania has some things to say. Pennsylvania's pillow is talking over there.
All right.
And we'll talk about it for most of the show today. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. Trio of local news stories starting, of course, in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Just before he left office yesterday, outgoing New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy made a little news with some bills he signed and didn't sign. In the latter category, Murphy pocket vetoed a pair of bills aimed at protecting immigrants in the Garden State. One was a data privacy bill. The other was a directive around when local law enforcement could work with federal authorities. Murphy felt one of the bills opened Jersey up to legal challenges, and he felt the other had a critical drafting error. Advocates disagreed. He did, however, sign a third bill that bars immigration enforcement in certain sensitive locations. Also this week, Murphy signed a bill, and this went a little under the radar, that totally changes the rules of the road for e-bikes in New Jersey. E-bikes in the Garden State now have to be registered and insured. You have to be at least 15 to ride one, and you'll need a license, either a special one for e-bikes or a standard driver's license. This change makes New Jersey one of the most restrictive states for e-bike use.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. And there have been a lot of injuries for people using these e-bikes, and they go pretty fast. So that definitely made news. Murphy also raised a few eyebrows on his way out. He signed off on a bunch of pardons, 148 of them in his final hours. And some of the folks were pretty politically connected. And one of the pardons that I think stood out was that of Harris Jacobs, who was found guilty of a fatal hit and run this week. That's according to the Atlantic County Prosecutor's Office. And the office actually issued a statement in response to that pardon, saying it had thoroughly prosecuted that case. And it should not be forgotten that the incident ended with the death of an elderly gentleman who leaves behind a grieving family. By the way, Harris is the son of Joe Jacobs, an Atlantic City power broker who in one night raised $100,000 for Tammy Murphy's failed campaign for Senate. So that one definitely raised some eyebrows. But I mean, you know, as a governor, he has the authority and the power to do that and to give some political favors on his way out.
And what's interesting is prior to that, Murphy had actually developed a bit of a reputation for taking the politics out of the pardon process, doing it through a more sort of independent review. And obviously, at the very end, zigzagged a little bit.
Yeah.
So something perhaps that we can discuss in the main segment today.
Yes.
Story number two, Cherry.
Yeah. Speaking of raising eyebrows, the case of a disabled Delaware immigrant ordered back to Ecuador this week has caught the attention of Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. Victor Acurio Suarez was arrested and detained by ICE in a Lowe's parking lot after he flagged down an officer back in September. He thought the officer could help him find work. An immigration judge this week, though, issued an order of voluntary departure. By the way, Suarez is 52 years old, but he is childlike. He cannot live on his own. And according to his lawyers who filed an asylum petition, he was targeted by gangs in his home country because of his disability. And under this voluntary departure order, Suarez must deport himself, or it could be converted to a deportation order where ICE could come get him and deport him. Governor Matt Meyer advocated for Suarez on social media. He called his arrest and detention deeply disturbing, noting that he did not have a criminal background and was arrested for what was basically a traffic violation. And Meyer even took it a step further, writing to the immigration judge, arguing that it would be cruel and egregious to deliver the Seaford resident back to gang violence.
Credit to Jeff Gamage at The Enquirer for reporting out this story and following it over several months. One of the things that distinguishes how ICE treated this man, Suarez, as opposed to how he might have been treated under a prior administration, is that he was kept in detention. He was not allowed to stay mm-hmm. at his home while all these proceedings were going on. And so it's an illustration of how immigration enforcement has changed in this country in the last year.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Story number three. Mere months after changing its logo and name, the Philadelphia Art Museum may reverse course. If you'll recall, in October, the institution changed its name from the Philadelphia Museum of Art to the mm-hmm. Philadelphia Art Museum. They also introduced a new logo with a big griffin figure in the middle. It kind of looks like a cross between a medieval crest and yep. a microbrewery logo. There was pushback. There was some mockery. I thought the logo was fine. But, you know, I guess I'm a basic bro. What do I know?
A basic bro. I like that. Go ahead.
Did you think it was a bad logo?
I
thought it was totally fine. Everyone was upset with the logo. I was like, what is our bar for logos here? Is this yeah. a terrible logo?
It wasn't terrible. No, I didn't think it was terrible.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not a logo guy. I guess mm-hmm. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Anyways, back to the story. New CEO Daniel Weiss told The Enquirer, quote, "We need to sort out the rebrand and determine whether we change it or stay with it. And we're looking at that." So they're actively looking yeah. at rebranding what is for now the Philadelphia Art Museum.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of drama over there over this logo. And the funny thing is, I doubt if the change in name from PMA to FAM is going to boost foot traffic or raise money, you know, which is what they really need to be focused on. And they bought a whole new web address. They got new swag. It's just like, just ride it out. And
you're in favor of riding it out.
I just ride it out. And,
why?
And the reason is because the brain science says that people don't like name changes. I did some research. I did research. You always shock when I do a little research.
Brain science?
The brain science says that people do not like when you change something that they're very familiar with. And so if you make the decision to change a name, you got to have an iron gut. And you just got to ride it out. Mm. People are going to buck. They're going to get upset. They're going to like
right.
complain.
They should have anticipated this.
They should have just anticipated this. And so, you know, think about it. Dunkin' Donuts became Dunkin'.
Yeah.
People were not happy about that.
Yep.
Weight Watchers went to WW. We're from Washington, D.C. area. Remember, it was the Bullets, and they got called the Wizards.
Yeah.
We went through that name change.
Yes.
We endured that.
Yeah.
And now we want to talk about the Commanders and all the changes
that they had. That's a
people complain. And so you just got to ride it out.
Yeah.
Ride it out. If you're going to go with FAM, 10 toes down, stick with FAM.
Anyway, so we're now Studio 3, and welcome to the program.
I'm sorry.
No, I will say, here's my only addition to what you're saying, because I agree with you.
I'm sorry, I got on a soapbox. I apologize.
We need more ranting on Studio 3. I agree with you. I agree mm-hmm. with you. However,
okay.
I think you have a very narrow window to do a funny U-turn that's also remembered fondly, like New Coke. You know, they had New Coke
first.
That is
true.
Like,
yeah.
if you pull the rug quickly, it kind of becomes
and
funny
and T-minus
endearing. Yeah, but they got to do it now.
Yeah.
You got to do it today. If you're going to go back, you got to do it right now.
So
it's kind of a cute story. It's not a cute story a year from now or even 6 months from now.
Yeah, they gotta make it up. But you're right. So
you gotta new Coke yourself right now.
Should we take some wagers on which way they're gonna go? Or is that for another show?
Or is there a secret third name? That's the real question. That's the real question.
And the thing is, if you go with a third name, they're still going to be mad. They're still going to be mad over a third name.
Henceforth, that institution will be known as Studio 2. We're Studio 3. And we're talking about talking about East Pennsylvania this hour, a.k.a. some people call it New Jersey.
The Camden metro area, yes.
Camden metro area, come on. Uh-huh. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you want to chime in on what Governor Sherrill's top priority should be for the Garden State. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here at WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Mikey Sherrill was sworn in as New Jersey's governor almost exactly 24 hours ago. Back in November, she defeated Republican Jack Cittarelli and secured Democrats a rare third consecutive term.
As the second woman to lead New Jersey, Governor Sherrill now takes the reins to make good on campaign promises, including lowering energy costs, improving K-12 education, making government more transparent, and upgrading New Jersey transit. She also vowed to stand up against potential threats from D.C. Here is what she had to say yesterday at the inauguration, and note that she did not mention President Trump by name once.
And this election proved that the people of New Jersey recognize the parallels, that we see a president illegally usurping power, unconstitutionally enacting a tariff regime to make billions for himself and his family while everyone else sees their costs go higher. Here, we demand people in public service actually serve the public instead of buying themselves planes and cars and extorting money.
So this hour, we look at what's ahead for Governor Sherrill. We'll also look back at now former Governor Phil Murphy, whose 8 years in office included major legislation on wages, taxes, and cannabis. Here to help us break it all down is our Garden State super team. Ben Dworkin is founding director of Rowan University's Institute for Public Policy and Citizenship. Welcome back to the program, Ben.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you so much.
Let's also welcome back Brent Johnson, political reporter in the State House Bureau of the Star-Ledger and NJ.com. How you doing, Brent?
Good. I'm happy to be here. Long day yesterday.
Long day. He was at the ball, folks.
Yeah, that's right.
Had
a tux on and everything.
I went to her inauguration in Newark, had to drive back down to my hometown to get my tux, and then drive back to American Dream. I didn't get home till 1 a.m. So.
Wow.
And then you came here. So thank you so much.
And doing it all for the people.
Exactly. Happy to be here.
And this is why this is our favorite team of New Jersey reporters. By the way, to you at home listening on the road, elsewhere, our question of the day is, what do you think should be Governor Sherrill's top priority for New Jersey? The number to call to participate, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop your comments in the chat. So, you know, I wanted to sort of start the conversation because Mikey Sherrill's victory gives Democrats a third consecutive term in the governor's office, something that is very rare, hasn't happened in many, many decades. How big of an opportunity is this for New Jersey Democrats? And Ben, I want to start with you.
Sure. Look, the reason people get concerned with a third term of any particular party is that you kind of run out of ideas. Like, all right, we've done stuff. What are we doing now? What's next? And that's what makes the Sherrill administration, I think, different. She's coming in at a very different time than when Phil Murphy came in 8 years ago. He comes in after 8 years of a very conservative governor, Chris Christie, someone who had vetoed a lot of progressive legislation that Democrats have been trying to do. And so there was this backed up kind of need. Wait, we've got this whole agenda. And they did a lot of it, particularly in the first 2 years of the Murphy administration. So 8 years of that, and now you've got Mikey Sherrill. That progressive stuff has been done. There's no giant agenda waiting to be done. They did it. She is going to be much more focused on making this stuff work. Yeah. And that is, you know, so you're looking at it's a third term. It's an opportunity. People who want to serve in state government are going to have that opportunity again. And Republicans, are going to be shut out from those kind of patronage and appointed positions. But it's going to be a different kind of administration.
Yeah, because she's a moderate when you think about her compared to...
Yeah, even if it's partially she's a moderate. And again, because I just don't think there's this huge agenda of things that they need to get done the way it was 8 years ago.
Yeah. And Brent, love to give your get your take on that.
Yeah, I think it's also it's a sign of how left-leaning the state has become, even though there was questions after Trump's election, is this now a purple state? But now you're going to have three straight terms in a blue state, and you have a Democratic legislature. So, you know, you can put New Jersey in that blue state category after wonders about whether it was going to be purple after Trump's election. And it's going to become a state that people watch because you have Cheryl openly saying she's going to stand up to Trump and be a check on his administration. So the question now is, how does she govern and how does she do those things?
Yeah.
Let's bring in a caller. This is Catherine from Marlton, New Jersey, on the line. Of course, today we are asking what you think Governor Cheryl's top priority or priorities should be as governor of New Jersey. Hey, Catherine, you're on Studio 2. What do you got for us?
Hi, you guys. Thank you so much for taking my call. My comment is mainly that, you know, top priority needs to be the reduction of costs, right? Costs of groceries, costs of fuel, utilities. It affects everybody across the board. It is a nonpartisan issue. The other one is that either whether it's behind the scenes, but I would prefer publicly, the government needs to do something about improving their reputation and improving their trust and actually unifying a very, very polarized society. You have independents, which, you know, make up the largest party nationally, the fastest growing party, and a lot of them live right here in New Jersey. You have sensible people who just simply want government to do what we're paying them to do. You know, business taxes that really are truly too high and extraneous. But at the same time, yes, ICE, who was operating. So government has a role, but it does a really horrible job of transparently sharing with the people. Hey, this is what we're doing. This is what your taxes are paying for. I understand it's our civic duty to do it, to go research it ourselves. But honestly, nobody does. And now, like, we're so far gone that people who watch Fox and people who watch MSNBC, that's what it used to be, right?
Yeah.
But now the algorithms have basically guaranteed that those on the progressive side and those on the conservative side now are getting news.
Yeah, totally. Understanding,
Catherine.
Two completely different
Absolutely.
Realities.
Thank you so much, Catherine. That's a lot to address. So let me steer the conversation back to our panel. Appreciate the passion, Catherine. Okay, so let's just talk about the lowering costs part of this, because it kind of goes to what you're talking about, Ben, which is there isn't this backlog of sort of progressive policies. I don't want to say easy wins, but sort of obvious places to go for Cheryl. And she's trying to tackle an issue, cost of living, that relates to a much larger economy than what's just going on in New Jersey. So realistically, what can she do? What do you think she's going to do to try to bring down costs?
It's going to be tough to bring down costs. I think the way she's going to try and address it, let me leave energy aside because she's going to deal with that separately. But I think she's going to try and make it easier. The cost is partially just the time you take to deal with something, right? You're a builder, you want to build an addition, it's just endless to get the permits approved. You go to the MVC, the Motor Vehicle Commission, because you need your real ID, and you're just waiting. And she reduces the times. That seems cheaper. I might pay the same amount of money for my real ID, $50 or whatever it's going to cost me. But if I do it in half an hour and not 3.5 hours, then it's a savings. And I think that's the way, because we are talking about giant global issues about inflation and supply chains and tariffs.
Yeah, the cost of eggs at your store relates to a vast chain of transactions
that have almost nothing to do with the governor.
The governor of New Jersey, right. There is, however, taxes. That's something that local politicians, maybe not necessarily the governor, but the local politicians have some control over. Is there something that Cheryl could or you foresee her doing in that area, Brent Johnson?
Well, that is the key question. New Jersey has the highest property taxes in the nation. The average is $10,000 now for the average taxpayer, which is a hefty bill. So this is something that you hear every governor talk about, regardless of party. The thing there, as you mentioned, it's usually a local issue. Most of your property taxes go to schools and are controlled by your local council and school board. What you've seen the government do in New Jersey in recent years is try to give rebates and credits to bring that, you know, burden down. You'll probably see Cheryl continue to fund those programs in the state budget. And she said she's going to do a number of other things, soaring energy bills. Mm-hmm. She signed executive orders on the stage
during her speech,
freeze rates and try to bring those things down. Whether that's going to be challenged in court or how that's going to work, those are all questions to find out. But you know, she made the two pillars of her speech and her campaign were, I'm going to be a check against Donald Trump and I'm going to make life more affordable for you. And she reiterated that during her speech.
Yeah, I want to play a clip from her speech where she specifically talks about affordability. Take a listen to what she had to say.
We're going to take on the affordability crisis and we're going to shake up the status quo. It won't be easy, and hard choices have to be made to drive down costs as the federal government slashes funding and slams doors to opportunity.
And she talks about hard choices. And so, Brent, I wonder what some of the choices that she's going to have. We talked about this energy cost. She signed two executive orders. Do they do anything really? And because I know they're calling in for more energy, they're freezing the prices. What is going to be the backlash?
Boiled down to it, she one of the orders freezes rate hikes. So it doesn't necessarily bring down costs, but it says these things have been soaring. This is going to stop here. Again, it might get challenged in court and we don't know exactly how this is going to work. The other thing is they're saying they're going to increase energy production. So that's one of the things that's making energy and electric bills so costly is because there's not enough energy being made in the state. So that's one thing. And, you know, the other thing, she's got a state budget address that she's going to have to give in a few weeks. And this state budget, supposedly, if you talk to both people on both sides of the aisle, not going to be an easy budget. It is going to has federal funding cuts and, you know, it does have a surplus, but there's also a budget gap, a structural deficit. So she's going to have some challenges right away.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, we talk about those challenges. One of the things that stood out to me was some of the choices that Cheryl made just right out the gate to sort of bring, the people, the Democrats together, like even doing her address in Newark, right, to bring the progressive wing in. She knows that she's more of a moderate. And I just wanted to sort of have you, Ben, sort of talk us through some of the choices, because that was a big criticism of her from the progressive. She's not progressive enough. They're leaving a more progressive governor. Your thoughts on that as she sort of has to make some tough choices dealing with affordability.
I think from a policy perspective, the next few months, New Jersey's budget has to be resolved. We have to have a balanced budget by June 30th. So we're already more than halfway through January. It's going to take her a few weeks to figure out where the bathrooms are and put together
and then
you've got to actually introduce what is upwards of a $60 billion budget. So that is, from a policy perspective, that's going to dominate really the choices that she has to make. But politically, the new governor is going to face a couple different issues. One is, as you were just talking about, that is the Democratic Party writ large in the country. As we head towards the midterm elections and nationally and the next presidential race, has conflicts. There are tensions between different wings of the party. The much more moderate wing, let's work through the system. The much more Bernie Sanders type wing that's like, oh, we're going to upend the system. The system's what's wrong. These kinds of tensions are going to be worked out. And we see those tensions in New Jersey. The governor, who is now the leader of the party in the state of New Jersey, is going to have to weigh in. No, you can't just be an aloof member of Congress now. You're going to have to actually decide. And these things these conflicts are going to appear in different counties and in different moments. The second big political issue, aside from just reconciling the issues within the Democratic Party, is going to be she, Mikey Sherrill, and a big part of the at least name team of her central staff are not Trenton people.
Yes.
They have not been working there. They don't have, they have relationships, but not extensive relationships. You have a very male-dominated legislature, a very insular Trenton Beltway community, and is going to bring, and now this new person is coming in. Historically, there have been tensions, not only because this is our second female governor mm-hmm. with a very male-dominated legislature, but also just the, we're the Trenton crowd, and you're not, and you don't know how things go, and we've got our own agenda. Those kind of tensions are going to be political landmines for her as well.
And I had a quick follow-up for that, because it dawned on me that Mikey Sherrill is not, she's from Virginia. She's only been in New Jersey like 15 years. And yet she goes from being a regular person in Montclair, New Jersey, to then 8 years later, she's a congressperson. And now she's in the governor's mansion. And she's bringing in some outsiders with her to fill out her cabinet. Brent, just your thoughts on that. Like, she's not if you think about what Ben just talked about, the fact that she's not inherently embedded in New Jersey politics, she's kind of like an outsider. Will that help her, or will that be an obstacle?
It's one thing. It'll be both, actually. It depends on the situation. She's kind of hinted at that. She did it again in the speech, saying that I'm going to take on the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't directly said, I'm an outsider. You guys need a D.C. person to come in and fix Trenton. She could have said that. She's been more subtle about it. But yeah, I mean, this is a town, meaning Trenton, run by entrenched people, and she's going to have to. Phil Murphy ran into the same struggles. It was quite different from Chris Christie. When Chris Christie came in, he decided to make PACs and bond because he knew he was a Republican with a mm-hmm. Democratic legislature, and he had to power broker George Norcross. Like, he had to form deals there, and Steve Sweeney, the state Senate president. And Murphy came in and had a rocky relationship with those people at first. They openly, George Norcross called Murphy and his wife the King and Queen of England, and that's how they act. So, you know, it's funny. That's now what Cheryl is basically calling Donald Trump. But, yeah, so different people navigate it different ways. And I think that there's going to be a learning curve, and it's not going to be easy at first. But this is, like I said, we haven't had a Democrat or any party 3 terms in a row since 1961.
Yeah.
So that was when the first man went into space. You know,
wow. Yeah.
You know, so this is brave new world territory. So we'll see.
Let's bring in another caller. This is Pam from Cherry Hill online, too. Hey, Pam, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. This is related to the environment. Governor Murphy had an Invasive Species Act ready on his desk to sign. Did he actually sign it, or is that something that that Mikey Sherrill will have to deal with?
I don't know.
Our producers did a little research, and apparently he did.
He did sign
that
bill.
Okay, so thanks for that question, Pam. Let me read in another comment. This is MJ, who says, I believe Cheryl's number one priority should be to focus on no-nonsense, good government competency. Now, I don't know if you agree with this, Ben, but there's some observers who feel like on the good governance and transparency front, Murphy kind of traded that in a little bit in exchange for other things and did not pursue open government and transparency as hard as perhaps he could have. Now, I don't know if you agree with that assessment or not, but regardless, do you think that Cheryl has a mandate to fight against corruption or opacity in New Jersey government? Or do you think that's a battle you just leave on the sidelines as you try to get other priorities through?
Okay, there's a lot there. Let me try and address them. Phil Murphy's legacy is going to be long and complicated. There are going to be people like me and other academics who are eventually going to write about it, and with time, we'll see. But I think politics is about the art of getting things done. And if we had only ourselves to answer to, it's easier. But when you have to negotiate and compromise, then things aren't necessary. There are deals that get made, and I'll do this for you, but you've got to help me do this. And when you look at, well, what was done, list these accomplishments, there were compromises that were made in order to get those things done. So I think that'll be part of a historical review of Murphy. In terms of whether Mikey Sherrill has a mandate, I think she believes she does. You know, a lot of us were looking at this race in the weeks leading up to it, really thought, all right, she's ahead. She's going to win 5 to 7 points. That's what we expect. She wins by 14.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she feels, I'm endorsed. I'm ready. And she talked about in her speech, in her inauguration speech, she talked about, like our first caller mentioned, she talked about affordability. Mm-hmm. She talked about protecting kids, which is, I think, is going to be social media, mental health kind of focus, or at least that's where she indicated. And she talked about government accountability. Because, you know, her line at the end of the campaign was about ruthless efficiency. And so I think that includes transparency.
Yeah.
That includes, listen, enough of the shenanigans. Get the job done. This is, that, you know, we have to get it done. And I don't want the extra stuff that goes around it. The real question, as I think Brent, you know, alluded to just a moment ago, is, can you do politics?
Well, I think the question I have is the old guard in New Jersey politics on the back foot here, or do they have momentum? Mm-hmm. I think on the momentum side, you could say they were able to get some priorities through in terms of open records laws in New Jersey. The back foot argument would be that folks like Andy Kim came in and upended the old ballot system, which really gave, you know, the county leaders within the parties way more power and perhaps ushered in this era of a more open, small D democratic style government in New Jersey. How do you parse that?
Yeah, he's kind of been the poster child for that since he basically he ran against the governor's wife.
Now, this is Andy Kim,
first lady. Andy Kim. Sorry, for the first lady, Tammy Murphy, and saying that she was benefiting from that. For all the talk of the Murphys being progressive, she was benefiting from this corrupt system. And he filed a lawsuit against the county line, the ballot system that fell out, and now you still hear Kim talking about fighting the machine. And so that's a theme you're going to hear. It's just become more common in politics now. It's people fighting back against what
and
they see
as
entrenched.
Do you think that old guard, though, is vulnerable in this moment and that Cheryl could really make some inroads?
It's, and then the question is whether she is part of the old guard or whether she's right. You know, she's kind of, she was endorsed by many of the Democrats who did not endorse Andy Kim at first. So,
but also not like a creature of Trenton.
Yes.
So it's a little hard to say.
I know. And that's where when she talks about fighting the status quo, a lot of people have scratched their heads because they've been like, well, you had the support of everybody, but you're also not those everybody.
Yeah. Right.
So it's again, kind of a fascinating thing to look at, but you're definitely going to hear more. Andy Kim's not going to go away with this stuff. And the question is where she falls on that. Just like progressives kind of got disillusioned with Phil Murphy at points, especially in his second term with things like the Open Records Act and election transparency, where he traded some things to get some things done, and they weren't very happy about that, you know. And then you'll also hear critics say progressives are never happy, just like conservatives are never happy. So we just have this politics where everyone's going to be mad at each other for now.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, you can participate in the conversation. Our question of the day is, what do you think should be Governor Sherrill's top priority for New Jersey? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you could drop a comment in the chat. Before we go to break, I want to bring in another caller. We have Rob from Hamilton on the line. Rob, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that Mikey Sherrill needs to focus extremely hard on protecting the constitutional rights of all people in the state of New Jersey against the fundamental assaults on those rights being carried out by the Trump regime.
Thank you so much for that comment, Rob. And I believe we have someone down in the comments who believes, who agrees. Justine says, I believe Mikey's top priority should be to protect the communities that got her into office in the first place, because they will be in the most immediate danger in the coming weeks. ICE is on its way to New Jersey, and all over the U.S., local law enforcement is helping them tear families apart. So that became a big issue at the very, very end of Phil Murphy's tenure. Perhaps we can touch on that.
Yeah, definitely want to touch on that. Also want to talk about the relationship between Phil Murphy and President Donald Trump, and what it looks like the relationship between Governor Sherrill will be like between President Donald Trump on the other side of the break.
The number again is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back on Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Before we get back to our conversation about New Jersey politics, we want to shout out our upcoming Studio 2 On the Road event. As a tribute to the 250th anniversary of America, we've been doing a series of events in old taverns across our region.
The next one is next Wednesday evening at Brittingham's in Lafayette Hill, a facility established in 1743. Cherry and I will be talking with a pair of experts about the French influence on the American Revolution.
Yes, oui, oui. And the event will also include a round of revolutionary trivia. I know y'all love trivia, as well as live comedic improv. Plus, attendees will get a beer or wine on us.
Free. Best
love free.
Four letters in the English language. You can join us for that event January 28th at 7 p.m. It doesn't cost you anything, but space is limited. You need to register at whyy.org/events.
Now back to our question of the hour. As we mentioned, New Jersey Governor Mikey Sherrill was sworn in yesterday. And so our question of the day is, what do you think should be Governor Sherrill's top priority for New Jersey? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop those comments in the chat.
Our guests this hour are Ben Dworkin, founding director of Rowan University's Institute for Public Policy and Citizenship, as well as Brent Johnson, political reporter in the State House Bureau of the Star Ledger and NJ.com. Before that break, we heard from a couple folks who really want Mikey Sherrill to stand up to ICE overreach and federal overreach in general. Let's talk, Brent, about what she could possibly do in that arena and whether you think it's in her nature to pick that particular fight.
Yeah, this was a topic that kind of dominated the morning a little bit because right before she was sworn in, Governor Murphy signed one bill into law strengthening protections against ICE and two that he vetoed, one including one that was kind of codifies the Immigrant Trust Directive, which limits how much local police in New Jersey can work with ICE agents. He said that this is just going to open up legal problems and it's going to be thrown out in court and what we have now is fine. Sherrill made similar arguments during the campaign about that. She had a kind of similar view, like, let's not poke the bear here. Yep. We have protections. So, and I know a lot of progressives and a lot of advocates were pushing for these bills, and they're pushing lawmakers to pass it again and have Sherrill. So this is going to come up again. She mentioned ICE in her speech. She said, you know, we understand people may be afraid that they're going to be pulled off the streets, and we have to do everything to protect families. So she did make a reference to it. She didn't introduce any initiatives or say what she could do. But, you know, governors can. There's a bully pulpit with Donald Trump, although, you know, he's going to throw the bully pulpit back at you. So I expect her to – she ran as the antidote to Donald Trump's administration, so I don't expect her to not say things on it. But the question is, what policy will she put in place is the question.
Yeah, and Ben, following up on that, I mean, when Mikey Sherrill was on the campaign trail, it was a different political environment than today. There's a lot more anger, especially on the left, about immigration and customs enforcement. Do you think that moves Sherrill at all on this issue? Will pressure within the party, and not just within the party, among independents as well, will that move her to take a more emboldened or aggressive stance toward the Trump administration? Or do you think, best you know, of her character and her nature, she is going to try to lower that temperature?
I think, look, her nature is to lower the temperature. You know, she's not a demagogue. This is not, you know, who she is as a person. That having been said, she understands there's a different moment right now. You know, after what we've seen in Minneapolis and St. Paul this week, there's a different moment than it was 6 weeks ago. And so I think she will stay. The thing that we can say about Mikey Sherrill, because we really saw this on the campaign, is that she's extremely disciplined. She is disciplined when on her message in the campaign. And I think she will bring that kind of discipline. So I don't think the moment of I'm going to just grab the microphone and impassionately, you know, yell about something, not necessarily in her nature. And that she'll stick with the we have to stand up. We're going to do certain things. We're going to do what we can do. This is important. She won't dismiss it. But I don't think it's going to be to the barricades kind of rhetoric.
Yeah. Before I ask you about Trump and the relationship between the governor and Trump, I want to read a couple comments. MJ says, I believe her number one priority should be focus on no-nonsense good government competency. And Justine on Facebook says, most people I know are complaining about property tax, groceries, utilities, and school segregation. We'll squeeze in a caller. We have Paul from Souderton on the line. Paul, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Good afternoon. Yeah, my comment is I think education should be one of our top priorities. You know, I think the federal government dismantling the Board of Education has kind of dumbed down this country, and I think we need educated people starting from the ground up. And, you know, there's that phrase, if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. And so I think that is a big priority for the governor of New Jersey. I don't live in New Jersey per se, but I think that is one of the things that she should touch on.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. And just a quick correction. I think Paul's referring to the Department of Education at the federal level. Don't want to confuse it with local boards of education.
Yeah. Any comment on that? I know that the lieutenant governor choice, big in education, lots of, you know, background being on the Board of Education there. Any thoughts on how he will impact this focus on education in New Jersey?
I'm not Dr. Dale Caldwell, who's the new lieutenant governor for New Jersey. Yes, has a significant experience both as a college president and as a local Board of Education member are on his resume. But there is going to be a new head, and she brought in an outsider, meaning a non-New Jersey person, to head up the Department of Education. New Jersey overall graduates more people from high school than any other state in the country. And in that sense, it's considered a very good system. There are certain districts where you are getting a prep school level education, and there are plenty of districts where you're not. So it's always an issue. It touches people. It's as property taxes, as Brett mentioned, you know, pay for schools. It's always going to be something that's debated, and it'll certainly be something the governor is going to make a priority.
Rob is complaining about what he calls Murphy's school funding formula in New Jersey and Albuquerque. School funding formula debate certainly predates Phil Murphy. However, Rob is concerned about that, and I know that is a percolating, ongoing concern.
Yes.
How education dollars are doled out in New Jersey. What's the state of that right now, Brent? And where do you see Mikey Sherrill potentially going on that issue?
New Jersey has a formula that it's supposed to fairly distribute state funds to schools. And Murphy has said the formula has worked. It changed during his administration, and that they've given out more money to schools than any other governor in history. But if you're in one of those schools that has seen your funding change because of this formula, you're not very happy
yep.
about it. And Sherrill and Cittarelli on the campaign trail both said that the formula needs to change again. They weren't exactly 100% specific. That was one of the first, the day after she won.
How shall it change?
Exactly.
How shall it change?
The day after she was elected, I had an interview with her, and that was one of my first questions. I was like, okay, you say you want to overhaul the school funding formula. How do you do it? And she gave a typical, you know, campaign answer. I want to change things, make it better. So that's one thing a lot of people are going to be looking out for, because she has to work with the legislature on that. And that's a thorny, complicated issue that goes back probably before I was born.
Someone's always getting money. Someone's always
exactly.
losing money. Let's bring in another caller now. Here's Roger in Morristown, New Jersey. Roger, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, hello. First of all, I really enjoy listening to Studio 2.
Thanks, Roger.
Thank you.
But my biggest complaint, I guess you could call it, are New Jersey property taxes. They keep going up. My taxes right now are ridiculous as what I pay. Since I've moved back to...
I think we lost Roger.
Okay. Well, Roger was echoing a very familiar refrain.
Denise says the same thing.
Among
property
folks
tax
who
relief.
Live in New Jersey, property taxes, property taxes, property taxes. We discussed it earlier, Brent. There's some things that the governor can do, but of course, these are local property taxes for the most part, and... So there's some tension there, and there's a question about how much a governor can do.
Yeah, that was one, in my exit interview with Murphy I had a few weeks ago, where we sat down in his office and I talked about his legacy. And that was one of the times, a few times he said to me, where I said, are property taxes ever going to go down in New Jersey? Because, like, they've only grown.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're asking me a lot of glass half-empty questions, Brent. And I was like, well, you know, we have a new governor coming in here who's going to have to deal with this now. And, yeah, because most people just want to yell at the person at the top for who's in charge of their taxes. And it's not always the state's fault, but the state can do a lot to bring it down. And there's been property tax rebate programs that I imagine Sherrill will continue. One is called Stay NJ. It's for seniors in the state, and it's also very expensive, and the threshold's very low. And I think there's been talk about maybe we have to change that to make it more affordable. So we'll see. But property, I mean, everybody, No one likes their property tax in New Jersey.
If I can just jump in, there's an old line in politics. You know, if it were easy, it would have been done by now.
Yeah.
But it's not. This is a very complicated thing. We have 564 municipalities in New Jersey.
Oh my goodness.
Each of them dictates their own property tax level. And so it's complicated.
Yeah, definitely complicated. Something else that's complicated is going to probably be the relationship between the New Jersey governor and the president. And Phil Murphy served under both Trump presidencies. And he told Politico that he did it following a formula. And he said, quote, be dogged about finding common ground and at the same time, don't abandon your values. He told them, and he says that it's really hard. And so I wonder, how do you think Phil Murphy did as governor and dealing with the Trump administration and sort of to piggyback on that, what lessons Mikey Sherrill should take from him? And Ben, I'll start with you on that. Yeah.
Look, it's tough. And one of the issues, one of the biggest things that conflicts between the Trump administration and the Murphy administration involved the Gateway Tunnel, involves the Gateway Tunnel, which is a $16 billion project. That is desperately needed because the flow, this is about tunnels between New Jersey and New York for railroads. That got put, what was his term? It was terminated, according to the president, sort of put on hold, according to his Secretary of Transportation. Their money is still there, so they're sort of paying it out. That's got to happen. This is a massive thing. Now, the Trump administration, at least press reports indicated the Trump administration did this during the shutdown, during the government shutdown, and it was actually an attack against people in New York, against Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer, but it affects New Jersey. So New Jersey's governor has got to figure out a way to get that project back on online. Mm-hmm. And that's a very difficult challenge. But that's one of the real ways that directly affects, because you're going to cut Medicaid. Every state is affected by that. That's potentially $3.5 billion out of New Jersey's funding formulas for people who desperately need it. But this this infrastructure project is critical to New Jersey's future.
Yeah. And so you want to get your thoughts, Brent, because she has to walk the line as governor because she needs this type of infrastructure project. At the same time, she wants to look defiant and stand up against the administration.
This is one thing I actually talked about with Murphy in that interview, too. It was he came into office at the beginning of the Trump administration in 2018. And he was guns blaring in his first inauguration. In his inauguration speech, he had a bunch of things about Donald Trump. And what changed was COVID, and he had to learn how to work with him to get ventilators and to have projects during COVID. And so he said he learned how to be pragmatic with the president. And he said that's the thing that Sherrill's going to have to realize, the same thing. Fight with your values and make sure you don't give those up, but also finding common ground is key because you're both executives of the two biggest branches of government that people deal with every day.
Yeah, gotta get stuff done.
One area where it was sort of a bit of a mini Waterloo for Phil Murphy was offshore wind. David from Galloway thinks the new governor really needs to try again on getting offshore wind approved in New Jersey despite opposition from the federal government. That's a different type of conflict between federal and local, but an important one to note. And more broadly on Phil Murphy as we wrap up, we could list the things that happened, you know, in those 8 years, you know, cannabis, the COVID-19 pandemic, medical aid in dying, cell phone ban in schools, minimum wage. When you look at all of that, Brent Johnson, what do you see as sort of like the fundamental accomplishment or mood of Murphyism in New Jersey?
He pushed the state to the left. He said he wanted to make New Jersey the California of the East Coast. And I asked him, that was the first question I asked him when we sat down, did you do that? He said, and then some. He definitely pushed the state more leftward after 8 years of Chris Christie. His second term was a bit different. He almost didn't win re-election and he focused more on affordability. But the cynics will say that no matter what Democrat came in after Chris Christie, you were going to get those things. He didn't have an easy road at the beginning. He fought with lawmakers, and he had to. But that's still his legacy. He pushed the state in a more liberal direction, and he proudly says that we were the most progressive administration of New Jersey history and America in the last 8 years.
Ben, do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah. Look, I think he did a lot, and it cost a lot. So you're going to start paying our full pension payment, and that's $7 billion a year. He ramped it up. Other governors had not been doing that.
Yep.
You pay the full amount into the education system that the formula calls for. That costs a lot. So we're at, you know, tremendously higher in terms of our overall spending. But he spent it on the things that he said he was going to spend it on. Mm-hmm. And I think that will be a significant part of his legacy.
And now they have to figure out how to make New Jersey more affordable.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, we know we could afford another hour with the two of you, but that's just us. The radio clock says otherwise. Ben Dworkin, founding director of Rowan University's Institute for Public Policy and Citizenship. Thanks again for coming into the studio, Ben.
Thank you so much.
And same to you, Brent Johnson, political reporter in the State House Bureau of the Star-Ledger and NJ.com. Brent, it's always a pleasure.
Always happy to be here.
Yeah, and thank you to everybody who called in, all our Jersey folks and some non-Jersey folks also weighed in. We appreciate you and everybody who wrote in as well. And of course, we got to say thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you here in Pennsylvania and East Pennsylvania and the South
Camden,
Pennsylvania,
and
a.k.a.
Metro,
Delaware,
Camden,
tomorrow on Studio 2. Be well.